We can turn to Hebrews chapter 11 this morning. Kind of finished up with Hebrews 10 last week, and beginning here in Hebrews chapter 11. You know, we're getting down to that time of year where the NBA playoffs are going, and they had the All-Star game here, I think, a couple weeks ago or something like that. And I don't really follow basketball. I don't care for. I'd rather follow the Patriots than the NBA. I don't have a favorite team or anything. But one of the things I've noticed in sports is that almost any sport has a Hall of Fame, whether it be basketball, football, whatever. Well, the Bible has a Hall of Faith. I like to call Hebrews 11 the Great Hall of Faith. The great men and women of the Old Testament who you know made it because of their faith. And if they can make it with their faith, then we as Christians are definitely, through the faith in Jesus Christ that we possess, going to make it if we remain faithful to the end. Hebrews chapter 10, in verse 22, I'm kind of backtracking here a little bit. The writer exhorts us to draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. And then in verse 39 of chapter 10, he finishes up the chapter by saying that we are not of those who draw back to perdition, but of those who believe to the saving of the soul. So he kind of finishes the chapter with an exhortation, if you will. You're either going to live by faith and draw near with a true heart, or you're going to draw back to destruction, to perdition. And the exhortation is that we are not of those who draw back, but who believe. Those who believe, and truly believe, don't just say they believe, but live it out, they will show the faith of Christ in their lives. You know, I'm always amazed how God works. It was interesting because yesterday we were at some races. So I saw a lot of my friends that I had from 10 years ago at this race yesterday. Guys that I used to race against that were out there working this race. And so I'm going around shaking their hands, saying, hi, how are you? Because I haven't seen a lot of these guys for a lot of years. And I get up to one guy in particular, and this guy never liked me. Never liked me back when I was racing. He would talk to me, he'd be civil with me, but he didn't like me. And I could tell he never really liked me. Well, I get up to him, I shake his hand, ask him how he's doing. They were busy, they were working the gate. And about 2 minutes into the conversation, he says, you know, I know you're a man of faith. Which had nothing to do with our conversation. And then he goes in about how his grandpa had just died. And evidently he was really close to his grandpa. And when his grandpa died, that really impacted him. So he said, I've been doing a lot of reading lately out of Proverbs. And I've been doing a lot of thinking. But he knew me 10 years ago. He knew I was a man of faith. And that's what stuck in his mind about me. Maybe that's what he didn't like about me. I don't know. So I offered that, hey, there's nothing more in this world that I would love to do than to sit down and talk Bible with you. So if you would like to have a Bible study, I'm all ears. And I'd love to do it. Which he was actually halfway enthusiastic about. So I'm going to follow up on it. But 10 years ago, at least 10 years ago, probably more than that, because he quit racing long before I did. The thing that he remembered about me was that I was a man of faith. That I wasn't hypocritical about it. So he wanted to talk to me a little bit about where he is today. Some of the things he's going through and the struggles he's going through. Now, we can be of those who draw back. We can be of those who believe to the saving of the soul. And our lives will bear that out. And you may not even realize the fruits of what you're doing. It may be many, many years down the road. And somebody comes up to you like this guy. Charlie's opening this morning was great. Really appreciated what he said. In fact, we don't even really need to spend a lot of time on Noah today because Charlie covered it all. And did a good job. The encouragement from the writer of Hebrews is to believe. Abraham, and we'll look at Abraham a little bit this morning, he believed God. And his belief was accounted to him as righteousness. When you believe God, your faith will show it. And if your faith ain't showing, your belief in God, then maybe your faith is not very strong. So two choices in Hebrews 10. Draw near or draw back. Each have consequences. One is good and one is not. So then last week in Hebrews chapter 11, we get this definition, if you will, of faith. Verse 1, Hebrews 11. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. Trying to remember now how it's read in the New American Standard. Ken, how's it read?
Assurance
and conviction. I've got it memorized out of the New King James, so that's what sticks in my head. Although I've heard it, the New American Standard version, 100 times, I always think of substance and evidence. Assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. See, the point is that our faith truly is what it's all about. Our faith will show where our heart is. Jesus said that where a man's treasure is, there will his heart be also. Then he says in verse 2 that by it the elders obtained a good testimony. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. It takes faith to believe that Jesus Christ is the creator of the universe. And Hebrews starts out by letting us know that right in chapter 1. That Jesus was the one who framed the worlds. It takes faith to believe that. Now he's going to give us some examples. And these are Old Testament examples. Old Covenant examples. And there's many of them that are listed in this chapter. And we're going to look at pretty much all of them. Because each one of them is unique. Each one of them defines faith in a little different way, and yet all the same. So he starts out in verse 4 with Abel. Now Abel is interesting to me. It says, by faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. Okay, so we're going all the way back to the very first family. The very first brothers, if you will, in the Old Testament. He offered a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, that through it he, being dead, still speaks. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 4 for just a quick reference here. Cain and Abel, the age-long story. We all know the story of Cain and Abel, but we'll just go ahead and we'll read a couple verses here. In Genesis chapter 4, we'll just start right in verse 1. It says, now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and said, I have acquired a man for the Lord. Then she bore again, this time his brother, Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering to the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. We know the rest of the story. Cain then, after his countenance fell, he rises up against Abel and he kills him. Because he was jealous. He was angry. Maybe angry at God because God had accepted Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's. When you go back to Hebrews chapter 11, it says it was by faith that Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain. You know, when I'm going through these, some things start popping into my mind. Okay, you got to remember that these are the first two brothers in the history of the world. How did Abel know that God would accept his sacrifice and not Cain's? How did Abel know that God was going to accept an animal sacrifice and not a grain offering? Aren't both prescribed under the law of the Old Testament? Well, it wasn't the sacrifice so much that was important, although that was important, because it says God respected Abel's sacrifice and not Cain's. Maybe it was the attitude with which the sacrifice was brought. As soon as he rejected Cain's sacrifice, God knew where it was going to go. It says Cain's countenance fell. That means his face changed. His face changed. You know, I've experienced this before. Where maybe you feel threatened or something like that. And I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but in my personal case, if I feel threatened, my whole demeanor changes. And it changes in a quick hurry. Almost to a state of defensiveness. And a state of anger. Or rage even. I think that's what happened to Cain. His face, his countenance fell. And he became enraged against Abel. And rather than offering the proper sacrifice with the proper attitude, he goes out and he kills Abel. It says there in Hebrews chapter 11 that Abel obtained witness that he was righteous. What was the problem with Cain? He was unrighteous. And his fruits revealed that. Abel, it says in Hebrews chapter 11, though being dead, still speaks. Let's go to Hebrews 12. Just jump ahead a little bit. Hebrews 12. In verse 24, as he's talking about the church and what it is that we have come to, in verse 23, he says in verse 24 that we've come to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaks better than the blood of Abel. See, Abel was the first to offer a sacrifice to God that was acceptable. And yet, that blood was not sufficient. The blood that you and I come to, the blood of Jesus Christ that was shed for you and I, that blood is the true blood that speaks even better than the blood of Abel. But it took faith on Abel's part to believe that God was going to accept his sacrifice.
I think one thing needs to be made pretty clear. When we speak of the blood of Abel, we're not talking about the blood of Abel, we're talking about the blood of the firstborn. He brought the best of his flocks. If you read it, and this is only speculation because sometimes what's omitted from a writing is just as important as what's in the writing. Notice with Cain, there is no references to the quality and the nature of his offering. Simply, he brought some grain. As opposed to Abel, who brought the firstlings and the fatted portions of his flock. So he brought that which would have been his nourishment. And anybody who's raised animals knows that your future is predicated upon keeping the best for yourself for future generations. But Abel offered it. And when Hebrews speaks of the blood of Abel, they're speaking about his offerings from the firstling and the fatted portions, not from the fact that, and I only bring this up because if you read Genesis, it speaks of the blood of Abel speaking from the ground, calling out to God for justice, and you shouldn't get the two confused.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification. I think everybody's tracking with what was said there and with what we're saying here, right? And do I need to clarify this at all? Okay. So the point is this. Abel's attitude and the attitude with which he offered the sacrifice was respected by God. It has a lot to say about our attitudes. Because we're to offer our bodies, according to Romans chapter 12, as a living and holy sacrifice to God. So if our attitudes are bad, well, God may not respect the sacrifice that we offer. And why would He? Verse 5, Enoch. By faith, Enoch, when he was taken away so that he did not see death, and was found because God had taken him, for before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please Him. One of the great statements of the New Testament. Without faith, it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. What was it about Enoch that God lists here as faith? He says he didn't even see death. Now, there's only two guys in the Old Testament that never saw death physically. That's what he's talking about. Never tasted of death physically. And Enoch is one of the two. And Elijah is the other one. Now, not a lot is in the Old Testament about Enoch. But verse 6 is the key. He says, without faith, it's impossible to please Him. And that's a reference for you and I. It lets you know a little bit about the character of Enoch. It says, he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 4 again. So, Cain rises up against Abel. And God drives Cain out. So it says in verse 16 of chapter 4 of Genesis, that Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. And he built a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. So Enoch is the son of Cain. Chapter 5. Genesis chapter 5. Verse 21. And Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. And after he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years. You talk about perseverance. For 300 more years, Enoch walked with God. That's the record recorded for us in the book of Genesis. And he was not, for God took him. And Enoch walked with, Methuselah lived 187 years and begot Lamech. That's pretty much the account of Enoch. But Hebrews 11 lets us know. Hold on one second. Hebrews 11 lets us know that what we got to do is believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. Perseverance is what I think of when I think of Enoch.
Just one small thing. the Enoch in chapter 4 that was the son of Cain. Different Enoch in chapter 5.
Is it?
Yeah. Enoch, this Enoch, if you back it up just a verse, his father was Jared.
Oh, okay, my mistake. Different Enoch.
Descendant of Seth.
Okay.
Enoch, this Enoch that we're talking about in Hebrews is a descendant of Seth.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that clarification. I didn't read far enough, I guess. So not the same Enoch. See, even I make mistakes. Okay, but Enoch walked with God. Now, in the New Testament, I can think of quite a number of scriptures where we're instructed as Christians to walk with God, walk in the light, as He is in the light. In who God is, with all that you are, then you will not persevere with God to the end. Enoch was righteous enough that God never made him suffer physical death. Now, we don't know how he died. It just says, and he was not. We know how Elijah got taken in a grand and glorious chariot of fire. Enoch just was not. But he's listed in the Great Hall of Faith. Noah, which Charlie covered this morning. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became the heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith. Imagine the ridicule in Noah's time. Nothing like the ark had ever been even imagined, let alone constructed. To go around and preach for 120 years like he did, that there was rain coming and the world was going to be destroyed, people didn't even know what rain was. What a lunatic. What a lunatic this guy must have been. Says he was moved with godly fear. Proverbs speaks of the beginning of wisdom starting at fear of the Lord, right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You think Noah was wise to get him and his family in that boat? Well, maybe not for the 120 years that he was constructing it. Can you imagine being ridiculed for 120 years? One house, just wiring it for about a year and a half now. We just finished it up this last week, for now. I know that it's going to change and we're going to be back there. But the initial contract is done. Was it Wednesday? Yeah, it was Wednesday because we got back late. On Wednesday night, when we got back, I felt like a burden had been lifted off my shoulders, even though I know that I'm going to be back there probably for another year. That's a year and a half. And I wasn't being ridiculed for being there. I was being ridiculed probably for not being there as much as they would like. Imagine building an ark for 120 years. Preaching to the people saying that the world's going to end and it's going to be flooded. It's going to rain. But Noah never doubted. He was moved by godly fear. And Charlie read the examples in the New Testament. Jesus using the example of Noah to show that at the end of time, that's what it's going to be like. It's going to be like Noah. Peter uses Noah to illustrate how baptism now saves us. Matthew chapter 8. This is a scripture that always comes to mind for me when I think of Noah. Verse 18 of Matthew chapter 8. And when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave a command to depart to the other side. And a certain scribe came and said to him, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus said to him, "Foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." And another of his disciples said to him, "Lord, let me first go and bury my father." But Jesus said to him, "Follow me and let the dead bury their own dead." See, as Jesus is getting ready to cross over, the discussion is as to who will be a disciple and who will not. And I imagine that Jesus had this happen many, many times, but this is recorded for us, these two instances here. Scribe comes and says that he'll follow Jesus wherever he goes. And Jesus informs him that, listen, even foxes and birds have homes. But the Son of Man has no home. It doesn't say that the scribe followed him, and he's never heard of again in the scriptures. So the indication is that he didn't follow him. Another of his disciples says to him, "Lord, I'll follow you, but let me go bury my father first." Jesus replies, "Let the dead bury their own dead." And then you never hear of him again either. Look at verse 23. And when he got into a boat, his disciples followed him. Very few who actually say they will follow Jesus truly do. The illustration is that the disciples were the ones who actually got into the boat with Jesus. Noah's example is a great one. They got in the boat and they were saved. You and I, we got to get in the boat. But we're not saved. Godly fear that God will do what He says He will do. Do you believe that when Jesus comes back, He's going to burn this world with fire? Does that motivate you? Because if it doesn't, then you don't have godly fear. Because that's the reality. Going back to Hebrews chapter 11. Says that Noah became the heir of righteousness, which is according to faith. Abraham and Sarah. Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith he dwelt in the land of promise and as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he waited for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. By faith, Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed, and she bore a child when she was past the age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and him as good as dead, were born as many as the stars of the sky in multitude, innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it is said, "In Isaac your seed shall be called," concluding that God was able to raise him up even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. A lot in this little section here about Abraham and Sarah, particularly Abraham. And Abraham, for me, is one of those guys that, you know, we have a lot of commentaries and a lot of things written on him about his faith. So nothing really kind of jumped out at me about Abraham. Not this time anyway. Abraham was called out of his homeland. God said, "Get out from among your countrymen and go to a land that I will show you." So Abraham up and leaves, not knowing where he was going. Now, I don't know about you, but if I've got to travel or particularly move, I kind of like to know where it is I'm going to be going. I don't like to not know the destination. And the other thing is, once I know the destination, it's like, hurry up and get there. The journey, for me, I don't like the journey. He obeyed. Went to a place which he would receive as an inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going. And a promise as in a foreign country. A foreign country. Dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. Didn't make himself comfortable. See, the nice thing about a tent is that you can easily pack it up and move on. He waited for the city which housed foundations, whose builder and maker is God. How is it that Abraham had a picture in his mind of the city whose builder is God? In the Old Testament, where God shows Abraham the picture. But Abraham had enough faith to realize that this world is not the home for the soul. Sometimes I get distracted with the material things in my life. And in this country, it's fairly easy to do. We live in a quite prosperous country. Got to remember that there is a city that will endure forever. It doesn't exist on this earth. And that motivated Abraham. That's just one aspect. He says in verse 11 that Sarah herself also received strength to conceive seed. And she bore a child when she was past the age because she judged him faithful who had promised. Sarah laughed. Sarah laughed when Abraham was told that she would have a child. And believed. Judged him faithful who had promised. Man and him as good as dead were born as many as the stars in the sky as multitude. Genesis chapter 12, when God says to Abraham that he will bless him, reiterates it in chapter 18 and 22. Abraham see that in his day? No. It's you and I who are the seed of Abraham, the church. God, when God said he would bless him. Thousands of years later, when the church comes on the scene, Paul died in faith, he says in verse 13, not having received the promises. Not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them. promises for you and I that exist from God that we have not seen the fulfillment of. And it's our faith. It's our faith that will drive us to maintain the belief in God. That those promises will be fulfilled. Quite frankly, if heaven is not a real place, then I have no motivation for being a Christian. And so my faith that heaven is real drives me every day. They, even though these things were afar off, embraced them, it says in verse 13, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. They were willing to sacrifice this life, this physical life, for that which is, well, greater. They were willing to make themselves strangers, to dwell in tents, to confess that they were pilgrims on the earth. I don't know if this is where the song that this world is not my home is written from. But when I read these verses of Scripture, that song comes to my mind. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. Because my treasure is laid up somewhere beyond the blue. Those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. This world is not it. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. See, if their desire had been to have an earthly dwelling, God would have made the opportunity for them to have that here. But that was not their desire. Not an earthly dwelling. Verse 16, but now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for He has prepared a city for them. Now, when we were up in Great Falls, Joe McDonough and I had a study with a lady and her family. And as we studied, the study kind of grew, and they would bring in friends and relatives. We were taking them initially through the Jewel Miller film strips, and then we took them through the Origins. When we were taking them through the Origins videos, this lady's daughter started sitting in with us about the time we started going through the Origins. And we got through about the third video, and we're talking about God creating the world versus it evolving. And I made a comment out of John chapter 14 where Jesus says that He has gone to prepare a place for them, that where He has gone, they did not know. I made a comment in the study concerning the creation. I said, as we look around us, if we believe that God did all this that we see in 6 days of creation, and Jesus died about 33 AD approximately, and has gone to prepare a place for you and I, and He still is preparing it because He hasn't come back yet, if He could do everything that we see around us in 6 days, what do you suppose He's going to be able to do with heaven when He does come back? How long has it been? 2,000 years? It's quite a long time. How glorious do you think that's really going to be? And her daughter was like, man, that is awesome. Motivated her to start reading her Bible. Now, she went off that fall and went to school, and we lost contact with her. So I don't know how her story has turned out. You know what Abraham saw? He saw a heavenly country. One that is beyond our imagination. Take all the glory that you see in the creation, and it's nothing compared to heaven. So he was willing to sacrifice this earth for the heavenly country. And it says that God, in verse 16, is not ashamed to be called their God. What an awesome statement to be made about anybody. that God is not ashamed to be called their God. For He has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. See, Isaac should have never been born. Sarah believed that she could conceive. Abraham, it says, was as good as dead when she conceived. And then God tests Abraham by having him offer up Isaac. I often think of what that would have been like myself, having boys. Strapping that rack of wood on the back of Tyson. Heading off up into the mountains. Knowing that when we get to the destination that God has prescribed, that I'm going to lift up my hand to strike him down and offer him up as a sacrifice to God. Could I do it? Would I do it? Well, I'm glad I don't have to make that choice. But Abraham did it. You know why? Verse 19. He concluded that God was able to raise him up from the dead. God had made a promise to Abraham in verse 18 that in Isaac your seed would be called. And Abraham believed that. Can you imagine the confusion that was going through Abraham's mind as he's loading that wood up on the donkey and preparing Isaac and heading out of town? Here God had promised that through Isaac, his seed would be called. And then God says, and go sacrifice him. I'd be a little confused. You might even think that God's a little bit contradictory at the time, wouldn't you? You might even question God's character. I make the statement in Bible studies that if you find contradiction in the Bible, then God didn't write it. Imagine at the time that Abraham was instructed to offer up Isaac, the contradiction that he probably felt in God, making him a promise that Isaac would raise him up, that through Isaac his descendants would be called, and then commanded him to go sacrifice him as an offering. But it says that Abraham believed that God was able to raise him from the dead. That's the only conclusion that he could come to. God must want me to sacrifice Isaac and then raise him from the dead. That takes quite a bit of faith, quite a bit of foresight to come to that conclusion in that moment. Had anybody been raised from the dead at this point? Not recorded. And yet the only conclusion that Abraham could come to was that God would raise him from the dead. Something supernatural that had never occurred before. And we know the rest of the story. Abraham didn't actually have to kill him. Although he raised his hand and he was going to let that knife go, the angel stopped his hand and provided a ram caught in the thicket for him to sacrifice in Isaac's place. What a great example of faith. The promises of God. Examples, New and Old Testament, of Abraham that were given. A great man of faith. My point is, what characteristics did these individuals possess that you and I can add to our faith? What type of character traits? Isaac. Very little is given of Isaac in Hebrews 11. It says, by faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. Genesis 27. This is the account of Jacob and Esau when Isaac is getting ready to bless Esau. So he tells Esau to go out into the field and kill some game and prepare it just like Isaac liked it. Rebekah overheard, goes out and kills a calf, and has Jacob put hair on his arms and his back and wherever else, and go in and steal the blessing away from Esau. Verse 26, and his father Isaac said to him, Jacob, come near and kiss me now, my son. And he came near and kissed him, and he smelled the smell of his clothing and blessed him and said, surely the smell of my son is like the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. Now it happened as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. He also had made savory food and brought it to his father and said to his father, let my father arise and eat his son's game, that your soul may bless me. And his father Isaac said to him, who are you? So he said, I am your son, your firstborn Esau. Then Isaac trembled exceedingly and said, who? Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate all of it before you came, and I have blessed him, and indeed he shall be blessed. When Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me also, O my father. But he said, your brother came with deceit and has taken away your blessing. Then Esau said, is he not rightly named Jacob, which means supplanter? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and now look, he has taken away my blessing. And he said, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said to Esau, indeed, I have made him your master, and all his brethren I have given to him as servants. With grain and wine I have sustained him. What shall I do now for you, my son? And Esau said to his father, have you only one blessing, my father? Bless me also, my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, behold, your dwelling shall be of the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heaven from above. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And it shall come to pass when you become restless that you shall break his yoke from your neck. So Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing of which his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the day is a mourning for my father at hand, and then I will kill my brother Jacob. Going back to Hebrews 11. Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. See, it was by the faith of Isaac, but the nation of Israel, which is eventually what Jacob's name became, not Jacob, which means supplanter, but Israel, by the nation of Israel, you and I are the descendants of Abraham. Blessed him concerning things to come.